You're listening to HG 101, a proud part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games Podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Splatterhouse looks like an actual serial killer's like basement. Mortal Kombat really just looks like the Halloween prop shop.
Mortal Kombat is a game, the fatality thing, right? Just, we've become so used to it, we don't think about how weird and brutal this is. It's not the actual, like, I'm going to rip your heart out in front of you and, like, take a bite out of it or whatever Kano does. It's that you can only do the fatality when your opponent is at your mercy, cannot fight back, and is just dazed. At that point, you could just let them fall. You do nothing and they die. But you could also choose to rip their head out. Mm-hmm. like literally unscrew their head from their spine and throw it like a beach ball or whatever it is you do.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source, the brain train, your knowledge, you'll lay maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes, the host of proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others, discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
I guess I have no choice.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another fantastic, amazing, legendary, possibly illusory episode where we're going to be talking about Illusion of Gaia, which was nominated by Click_22 on Apple Podcasts. Thank you, Click_22. It was developed by Quintet and published by Nintendo, of all people, in the United States, and Enix in Japan for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System on November 23rd, 1993 in Japan. Who's with me to talk about Illusion of Gaia?
I am Word on the Wind.
I'm Expert 74.
And I'm Satanga.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're so glad to have a packed roster to talk about this game because it's a big game in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like I was trying, like, okay, so just going to pull back the curtain a little bit. When I organize the schedules for this show, I try to make it so each week has like kind of one like lesser game, not lesser, but like kind of, you know, a little bit under the surface, a little bit under the radar kind of game. And then one
kind of like a sleeper hit kind of thing.
A little bit bigger. Well, I mean, they can't all be hits, but like a game that is not as well known and then another game that's much more well known. So with this one, I was kind of struggling because I remember Illusion of Gaia as being kind of a big game because I was alive when, you know, in the Super Nintendo era. And I remember this getting promoted very heavily. I mean, Nintendo decided to publish it, which is a big deal.
Yeah,
they didn't do that to third party games unless they thought it was really good. And they really promoted the hell out of it.
Yeah, it did have a cover of Nintendo Power, as I recall. So, you know, any game that gets that privilege has to be worth talking about. Like Vice Project Doom, for example, a favorite of mine.
Also, if you have the full copy with the book and the manual, The manual actually has a Nintendo Power branding on it, and it has a mini walkthrough built in, so it seems like Nintendo really wanted to ensure that people who played it would be able to enjoy it fully.
Yeah, they did that kind of something like that with Earthbound, right?
I think so. To a greater extent, yeah.
Yeah, Earthbound had its own strategy guide in a proprietary non-standard box.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This isn't
like with Scratch and Sniff.
Wait, are you sure you're not confusing that with Earthbound?
That's what we're talking about. Oh. We're saying that this was kind of a little bit like Earthbound.
Illusion of Gaia did the same thing.
Yeah, the Illusion of Gaia Scratch and Sniff strategy guide did not make it out of the warehouse, unfortunately.
Ah, yes. What do the Nazca lines smell like?
Hamlet.
Yeah.
No! Spoilers!
I'm sorry.
All right. I'm going to try and right the ship here, tie myself to the mast, and steer us back on course. So, yeah, Illusion of Gaia. So, this, you know, it's a quintet joint. And if you know quintet, that's because you like great Super Nintendo games. And they made, what all did they do? They did Soul Blazer is the one I was a big fan of.
They did Soul Blazer, they did this, they did Terranigma, and then in the PlayStation era, they made Grandstream Saga. I don't know of anything else that they did. Oh, wait, no. They did
ActRaiser.
Oh, yeah, ActRaiser, that's ActRaiser. Right, of course. They also did RoboTrek, or Slapstick, as it's called in Japan. I'm remembering that now.
I haven't played that one much. I heard it's weird, but...
It is weird. It's like a lot of their games. Yeah, ActRaiser, Soul Blazer, ActRaiser 2, Illusion of Gaia, RoboTrek, Terranigma, the Grandstream Saga. Moving on, yeah. They did development support on Shenmue, which is interesting.
Huh. Really?
Didn't know that one.
And they did a Godzilla game and a couple anime games, it looks like, and then dropped off the face of the earth. You will be missed, Quintet. But in the Super Nintendo era, right? If you were like me and you were way into ActRaiser, and then you played Soul Blazer and you were way into Soul Blazer because that game kicks ass. Like, this was a big deal, but I didn't know it because I thought it was a Nintendo game, so I never really played it until recently. And we didn't get Terranigma, but I did play RoboTrek, and I didn't know that was Quintet, but I thought that was weird as hell. But it was interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So it's like, it's weird because the thing that nowadays you would use to sell this game and say, hey, it's the other Quintet, you know, it's one of the Quintet Super Nintendo games. That's a big deal.
Yeah. The Quintet Heaven and Earth trilogy, which is actually a quadrilogy that it's colloquially referred to for Soul Blazer, Illusion of Gaia, and Terranigma, of which I feel that Soul Blazer is the strongest of the three myself.
I do too, yes.
If you count ActRaiser, I've never played the other two games. I've only played Illusion of Gaia, also ActRaiser, but that's not super comparable.
It's pretty different compared to Soul Blazer. Like,
got a lot of the same sound effects, though.
It does.
Yep.
It's got like the same, like, just like bumping. Well, it's pretty badass soundtrack for Soul Blazer. Not quite ActRaiser level, but almost. Soul Blazer's awesome. I kind of wish that was the game we're talking about, because I have a much fonder memories of it, because I didn't know this was them. But in another way, like, I don't think I could have given this game a fair shake at the time, because I really expected something like Soul Blazer, which was not like, it was like Zelda meets ActRaiser in a lot of ways. Like, you're like kind of building out areas, unlocking areas as you go.
And it's kind of like a pseudo sequel to ActRaiser, because you're still taking orders from the master / god.
Right. It's like that little naked baby grew up and that's you. So this game is not anything like that. I don't know why it counts. Like, I've also not played Terranigma. Like I said, that game did not come out in the United States.
Terranigma is kind of a combination of this and Soul Blazer in its gameplay.
That game does have like a really good reputation though, still, right? Or is it just one of those games that it's rare, therefore it's got a good reputation?
Terranigma is pretty good. It has a couple stumble points, but on the whole, it's pretty solid.
It does involve like a weird, like, isn't it like yet another game where it's like a epic battle between like heaven and hell or something like that, just like ActRaiser and Soul Blazer.
Kind of, sort of, not really. You start in the underworld, and then you leave there, and then rebuild the surface of the Earth.
I just don't understand why they didn't release Terranigma here.
Well, that's a subject for another time.
It is. Okay, so Illusion of Gaia is really nothing like that. And I feel like Illusion of Gaia is Quintet saying, not so much that this is, like, because those, you know, Terranigma and Soul Blazer are similar to Zelda, especially Link to the Past and all that. But they're not super similar. They've got their own thing going on. I feel like this game is not so much like we're going to do a proper Zelda. I think it's more like we're going to do a Final Fantasy, but with like an action RPG.
You're a little more accurate than you realize with that, considering the ending.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get to that. I don't know whether I want... I mean, the ending is...
I don't need to talk about the ending.
Yeah, so...
Say, do you like Evangelion?
I do.
Well, that makes one of you.
Ouch.
I'm still watching Evangelion. I haven't finished it yet.
We can talk about that later.
In a way, expert, you never finish watching Evangelion. You just keep experiencing it anew.
I see.
Okay. No, I'm not joking. Like, I don't honestly know what to tell anybody about that series or this game.
Are you just trying to not talk about this game?
No, I'm not. So it's like action RPG. It's very story heavy, unlike Soul Blazer, ActRaiser, and probably Terranigma, though I don't.
It is more narratively driven than Terranigma is.
It is very much like, and it feels like, especially starting out, it feels like nothing so much as the beginning of most Dragon Quest games.
So, like, the structure of this game kind of has you playing the part of this kid named Will, who has his lineup of idiot friends with bad ideas, and then one day he just kind of discovers that, oh, hey, I have access to this portal to the dark side of the world or something, and it gives me superpowers. That's great.
He can talk to a giant lady head. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they, you know, he gets arrested for crimes, I guess.
No, okay. Look, I played this game too. That's not what happens.
You
always have to escape from the prison at some point, and then you take the princess with you. I don't remember the details exactly.
You're not arrested for crimes. Like,
I just replayed the beginning like a few minutes before we started recording this. It's because his father, who has gone missing during the events of the game, was claimed by the king to have a ring in his possession, and the king wanted that ring, but none of you know what this ring is.
Okay, so political prisoner.
It's funny because you get a letter or a message from the king in the beginning. He's like, bring the super signet ring of doom or something to the castle. And then you're like, I don't know what that is, but I guess I can go to the castle. So you go, and he's like, where's the ring? And you're like, I don't have it. He's like, I'm throwing your ass in jail, boy.
I believe what happens next is that Will's mom got scared, so he sent him to his auntie and uncle in Bel Air.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the game. He got the gist of it.
As soon as you like break out of prison, so begins the globe-spanning adventure where you kind of realize that things aren't quite right in the world in a more of like a metaphysical sense. And your roster of idiots just kind of keeps shuffling off the mortal coil along the way.
And by that, if you're not fluent in English major, she means they die.
Actually, one of them becomes a giant fish. Spoilers.
Like I said, if you're not an English major and familiar with Shakespeare. Oh, wait, I'm confusing. Okay, sorry. That doesn't happen in any of Shakespeare's like 36 plays or whatever it is. Nobody becomes a fish. Somebody becomes a donkey head guy, but that's it.
Yeah, close enough. I mean, he's a jackass, so.
Indeed. And guess what his name is? Look it up, kids. Anyway, this game was surprising to me because if you're expecting a game where you like travel the globe, this is it, but it doesn't work the way you think it is.
Yeah, there's no overworld or world map or anything. You just kind of go on a tour of the world.
It's
that's more or not less quite like right.
Indiana Jones airplane.
There is a world
line
map, but you can't freely explore it.
Oh yeah, it's a Fire Emblem map. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Please continue talking about Illusion of Gaia, because I think we've already surpassed like my actual firsthand knowledge of the game.
Yeah,
I have watched people play it, but
so. Over the course of the game, you keep, like, stumbling into the Dark Zone, and that's, like, your safe haven, and from there, you start to be able to transform into, like, this fully grown man who's called, like, the Dark Knight Freedan, which is a weird-ass name, and he basically becomes, like, both Will and Freedan, and towards the back end of the game, another transformation unlocks, but it's basically just these two for 90% of the show here.
Freedan looks like buff Legolas is what he looks like.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's like taller than every other human being in the game. And he's like got shoulders that are as wide as your character is tall. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's got flowing locks.
You wish you could be him all the time. But
I just want to like smother my face between his pecs and just like,
oh my goodness.
Fall asleep.
Was Fabio still popular by the time this game came out?
Maybe.
When you're not Freedan, you are beating monsters to death with a flute as Will.
Yeah, that is pretty strange. Like, you would think it would break apart, right?
Apparently, it must be made out of like
adamantium or something. Yeah,
I know. But yeah, as you proceed through like the various like zones and dungeons and etc. You basically need to switch between them because there's, you know, some things that Freedan can do and there's other things that Will can do. And so you have to just kind of like balance out which is which. And it basically just about any time that you're controlling Will, you kind of hate yourself because Freedan is just way better and hits harder for that matter.
It's like he's
a knight or something and has an actual weapon and not an instrument. For most of the game, it's just this really basic affair on the gameplay front. It's just kind of, you know, walk forward, hit things, don't get hit, etc. And then towards like the 70% mark of the game decides, oh, right, there's supposed to be something resembling a challenge. So here's these vampires. And
I think that's less than 70% of the game, actually. More like 40%.
Yeah, it's a little earlier on.
Is it earlier than that? I always felt like that was the end game.
They're the third.
They are pretty tough, though.
Everybody
hates the hardest fight in the game. The game fades over once you beat them because there's nothing else a challenge after them.
Well, except
I think the later bosses are pretty tough.
You do have to go on a boss rush before the final boss, which, in my opinion, except for Mega Man, is one of the laziest things that you can do in a game for filler's sake.
But over the course of the game, there's these, like, red crystals that this guy wants you to collect, and you can just, like, hold them in the air, and they just fly to him, and you get access to a secret dungeon that doesn't give you anything if you actually collect all of them over the course of the game. Mm-hmm. The game, and that's pretty much all there really is to talk about gameplay-wise. This game tries to lean on its narrative more than anything else, which is, you know, admittedly, it's much darker than a lot of its contemporaries on the SNES because, you know, there's regular instances of, you know, okay, people you know die and it's like, oh, hey, this named character just died. Hey, this named character just died. Oh, no, the pig is dead. The best character in the game is dead.
Hamlet, no!
It seemed especially, like, significant to me considering this was a game that came out before the ESRB was established, so it's kind of interesting to see, like, a game this dark on the Super NES
when
it's localized.
If this was a post-ESRB game, like, I imagine that, you know, at the very least, this would be rated T, which is probably what I think it would go for, given its, you know, general content. Or, you know, the more likely thing would happen of if we'd just get, you know, censorship. I would just be like, oh, totally. They just went on vacation. But, yeah, it's you see villages, like, suffering starvation, which is why you lose the best character in the game.
There's slavery.
You do see slavery, you do see, like, all this other stuff, and it's, like, it does have heavy themes, and it does, like, kind of carry them sort of well, but, like, I feel there's other entries that do such things better, and it's just the fact that this is a SNES game that does it that is just kind of, like, a novelty for the matter.
Well, I mean, there's this, it's about as heavy as I'd say Final Fantasy VI is, right? Like, it's not...
I think it's comparable.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VI is, like, I think a longer game and one that has, like...
It has more time to explore those themes, yes.
And it has the
Much of like this is kind of a globe trot. This is also kind of a depression trot. It's just like, okay, let's see what the next horrible situation of humanity is.
I do love Illusion of Gaia a lot, but in terms of that comparison, I do give Final Fantasy VI the edge a bit.
There is one part in the game where you are forced to spend at least 5 whole minutes floating on a raft.
Oh, I love that part.
Yeah, you're adrift at sea with one other person, and it's like, oh, hey, we don't have a source of water. Oh, hey, we don't have a source of food. Okay, we have fish. We don't have a source of vitamin C. We have scurvy now. Great.
The pretentious part of me wants to say this is a rather interesting proliferation of narrative that proves that a game can be a game without you necessarily having to bash stuff's heads in with a flute. The practical part of me says it feels like they're just trolling me. When the hell's the game going to start again? Come on, get on with it.
Yeah, it's weird though, because Final Fantasy VI is a game that, I mean, first of all, it's a straight up RPG. So you're not bashing anything. You're just touching buttons and entering commands and stuff. On top of that, it's way longer. And on top of that, it's kind of like even more pretentious, but for some reason that really works for me. Whereas this game, I guess, is just, it's something about like, if you tease the player with the action, I mean, okay, so it's an action RPG. So you're not teasing the player. It's like, big part of the game. But if that's a part of the game, I guess like if it's action based, you just kind of like, you get habituated to it and you just want to keep like killing stuff and doing stuff and moving. And that's why Zelda works so well, is that the story is mostly experienced and not told to you, and you just get to keep moving around and doing stuff and you feel free. Whereas in this game, you feel like you're being shunted from place to place, and the story is not bad. It's pretty good. And the localization seems pretty good too, but it just doesn't, for some reason, it kind of eats up my patience in a way that Final Fantasy VI doesn't. And I wonder whether that's just because I first played Final Fantasy VI when I was like young and impressionable and could be blown away by this kind of thing. And now it's sort of ho-hum.
I think a not insignificant part of it is that all the other examples you listed have much more interesting characters to, you know, supplement the narrative. Just about, like, other than the pig, everyone in this game is forgettable.
I disagree with that.
All right, go ahead and expand
expert
on that.
How do you feel about the story and all that?
Well, to be fair, it's been a while since I last fully played through this game. I completed it, the last time was about a decade ago, so I don't remember it as fully as Word probably does.
That's around the time I last played it too, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, in particular, I really like the game's character development. Like, not everyone who joins you for your journey will stick around through to the end, as we said earlier, with the characters departing on their own terms. And you also really get a feel for how each character changes over the course of the game and understand how different the characters here end up becoming by the end of the story. Like, it feels like the game's world exists as its own entity without necessarily revolving around you personally.
Can you give an example of that, expert? Because I think that's a good point to make, and I'd really, without spoiling too much.
Well, one thing that stands out in my memory is the main princess character, Kara. She's like a very spoiled brat early on, but she goes through, I wish I could remember more detail, but she goes through some pretty sobering things throughout the story, and it felt like she matured, to some extent by the end.
Even in the very beginning, like, she kind of, like, even, I don't know how old she's supposed to be, but she's, like, more or less that my mom and dad seem like they're pretty much possessed, and you cannot trust them, and I'm going to run away. That's kind of a big deal, like, if you think about it. That's the sort of thing that
stuff.
Yeah, like, it's not an easy thing to come to terms with, but she's pretty much ready to bolt. And she's like, they're not the people I know. Like, my mom and dad are not really themselves anymore. And I don't know what's happened, which is interesting, but it's weird because her sprite looks like it's a throwaway character. because it's like a little shorter and kind of stubby, like a little kid. And I was really surprised that she kept sticking around, because I was like, this can't possibly be a major character, but it is. I am interested because I feel like, especially the beginning of the game, it feels a lot like the last two Dragon Quest games I played, which are 11 and 7. And they both kind of begin in a very similar way. And again, you know what? Yeah.
Chrono Trigger ripped off the beginning of this game, didn't it?
I actually have not played Chrono Trigger yet.
Okay, well...
That's the one major Super NES game that I still haven't played at all.
You're lucky you just have one of those, because I've got a lot of them, and I lived for that time period. Like, there's so many, like... There were so many Super Nintendo games, and a lot of them are really good, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It's
like, with the Genesis, I have an excuse, because I didn't have one, but...
I didn't have one until 2002, but... And also, Evangelion came after this game, so my comment, like, 20 minutes earlier about Evangelion, I totally strike from the record.
If you don't mind... sorry, what were you going to say, Satanga? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Actually, I'm not sure now. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. I ruined everything. So, Expert, like, can you give another character example? Like, who's your favorite character? If that was your favorite character, who's your other favorite character? Well, besides the pig.
I guess Kara was one of my favorites, but also I remember the girl who transforms into a dandelion, Lily. I remember her being kind of like interesting, how another character who can also change forms would join you for your journey, but then like halfway through the story, she ends up departing. I don't know if I want to say the reason why, but she ends up like just leaving on her own terms because she found something else that she cared about doing. And it seemed interesting to me.
That's kind of a bold choice too, because it's when you introduce a character in any kind of game that has like party members or something, mm-hmm. when you remove a character from the game, especially if you don't necessarily kill them. But even if you do, like when you remove a character from the game, you're kind of like taking content away from the player that the player is expecting. And that's a way of, you know, it's something that is very obvious and easy to do. It just doesn't get done that often because it really rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah. Like, I don't even remember that character. Like, so, you know, I can't really comment on the specifics of what's going on. I don't remember anything about that. I already said that I don't find a lot of the characters in this game particularly memorable or interesting. But on the subject of a character that just kind of, you know, just kind of gets on a bus and leaves as far as the narrative is concerned, that always, like, strikes me as, like, okay, I thought this was going to be, like, an important character, but I guess not. This is just, you know, some incidental whatever and... Maybe they have an impact, maybe they don't, but with a silent protagonist, it's kind of meaningless.
Wait, did you say silent protagonist?
The protagonist is not a silent protagonist.
He actually has quite a bit of dialogue.
Does he?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He talks all the time.
Yeah. This is how forgettable the narrative is to me.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, it's your character talks, which is the most surprising thing to me playing it now. With very little background information, is that's not the norm. Right. So I will say that I don't know, at least up to the point where I had to stop playing the game, I don't know how important the fact that the main character talks is.
I mean, he is his own character. You're not playing as a blank slate by any means.
I guess it's just like it's bucking a genre convention where you're expecting it to be like Chrono or Link or... Pretty much every other kind of
arc talks.
Gordon Freeman.
Arc actually has a personality that sticks with me. He's a jackass.
Yeah.
Anime protagonist.
I won't say that. But I didn't spend enough time with the character to really say that I got an opinion. But I didn't get a lot of personality from the dialogue. But that's fine because usually the norm is there is no first. You know, the player stand-in character doesn't have dialogue, so you can't say that they don't have enough personality because that is the norm.
Yeah.
So if it talks at all, that is personality.
I can admit they at least tried to attempt a stronger narrative than what you'd expect from most action RPGs around this time. But it was an attempt that maybe didn't entirely succeed, and I wonder how this would have turned out if they had focused less on the story and more on the gameplay. Like,
or the other way.
So, expert, like, I'm pretty sure you told us this, but when did you first play this game?
When I was in elementary school. I don't remember the exact year, but I was probably, like, not even in third grade when I played it, so wow. Younger than that.
So you played it on hardware, basically.
Yeah. I still own the cartridge and box and manual, actually.
Why did you pick out the game, or was it something that, like, an older brother or sister had that...
I can't really remember. I don't even remember if I had the Nintendo Power issue that promoted it or not. It might have been something that I rented one time, and then I might have liked it enough to ask for a copy for, like, a birthday or something.
That's really interesting.
It just made an impression on me.
What other kinds of games were you playing at that time?
Well, I was playing stuff like... I wasn't super into Zelda. Like, I had the NES games and A Link to the Past, and I thought they were cool, but I wasn't super into Zelda. This actually appealed to me at the time more so than A Link to the Past, because I liked the greater focus on story that it had.
It's good.
Also, I was mostly, like, playing, like, side-scrollers, like, you know, like Mega Man X, so... I guess Illusion of Gaia was a little bit outside of the norm as far as my game playing preferences as a kid, but I really love, you know, the music is really good. Also, the sprite work at times, like especially for Will, is really impressive. And
does have a lot of expression.
I just really like it.
They do pay attention to detail. It's like anytime you're like in an area where like there would reasonably be wind, like his hair and his clothes will billow in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you mentioned that, I do remember that detail.
There's also some neat attack animations. Like you can just do like the standard like thwacka 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 attack, and then you can also do kind of like a lunging attack, which looks kind of cool.
It's interesting how that's activated by not pressing a button, but rather pressing in a direction on the D-pad.
Right.
I felt like that lended an interesting kind of flow to the combat when you're playing as well.
It is. I don't know whether I could really master it, but I bet if I spent more time with it, I would get it. But that's kind of a thing that you see more often nowadays, I think, than you did back then. It was, I think they were much more focused on, like, perhaps because of Zelda, perhaps not. But they were much more focused on just like getting the, just this is your attack, make it count.
Yeah, I will say that maybe, you know, if it's far from the best or most creative plot, that this game's attempt at more narrative does at least set it apart from Soul Blazer, which was incredibly bare bones in the notion of story, for better or worse.
It was.
I kind of disagree with that one. Like, there's a lot of, like, cohesion to Soul Blazer's narrative if you pay attention to it. Like, I've played Soul Blazer more than this one just because, like, I enjoy playing it more, and I've paid attention to the narrative going through, and it's just kind of like, it also deals with some pretty heavy stuff and is also rather coherent about it.
Yeah, I guess I just don't care. Like, the thing about Soul Blazer, what's interesting is the way that it deals with, again, this is another weirdly Dragon Quest-esque thing, but the way it, like, you unlock areas of, or free areas of different towns, and by completing areas in the dungeon, you unlock stuff, and then you go and you could talk to him, and sometimes all you unlocked is, like, a squirrel or whatever it is. But, like, you kind of learn about the character, like, these little nobody characters, and because you helped free them, they seem more real to you in a way, but there really is very, very little story. Like, I got to give this game credit because I feel like there is a real intent to do something different here on Quintet's part, and that's laudable. I wish I could get more into the story, but again, I don't think I was able to spend enough time to really do that. I think my favorite part of the story is at the very, you know, of the parts I played, is the very beginning, when is one of the many areas in the beginning where you're basically just wandering around until you figure out who you got to talk to get the story to move on, which was kind of frustrating and ate up a lot of my, you know, time to play the game, because I wanted to do it, you know, legit. I didn't want to go through a walkthrough because I wanted to have this experience of playing it for real. But I like when you go to your like little kids, like your buddies, like hideout by the docks, and they're like, hey, do that thing where you use your mutant power to telepathically move objects across the room. And then you do it, and they're like, wow, that is so cool. I can't believe you can do that. Well, back to my card game.
So this is really an X-Men game is what you're saying?
That's exactly what you are. This world accepts you.
You know, I think Illusion of Gaia's structure is actually kind of forward-thinking in a way with how it focuses on story and presentation. Like, not that there isn't gameplay, but the gameplay often works in service to the story rather than the other way around. So it feels kind of comparable to, like, the structure of many modern games in that sense.
I can see that. I mean, it's all they're doing is they're making a very conscious choice. It's not like they're sacrificing something. It's like, we're going to focus on this.
Right.
They could have just made like a Soul Blazer 2, but they didn't. And obviously what they did really impressed Nintendo, or Nintendo would not have published it. Mm-hmm. So
I can see Nintendo wanting to put out something like this in, you know, like, okay, here's something with a greater focus on narrative and less of a focus on, you know, jump, because, you know, we've already got Mario. We don't need any more of that. But, well, like, this is all, we're also going to expand, you know, the idea of what a game can do and attract, you know, the interest of people who would be more put off by, you know, a much more action-inclined game than, you know, a more narrative-inclined game. Because, like, at that point, you know, it was like, there had definitely been, you know, like, text adventures and whatnot, and those had definitely had their market. And I imagine doing something of like a hybrid affair like this would be, you know, an interesting way to kind of test the waters of the overseas market.
Yeah. They were trying to get their foot in the door, so to speak. Like, ever since they, you know, published Dragon Warrior, they know that there's a market for this stuff. And the ironic thing is, like, just when that market started opening up is when they abandoned it. You know, they're like, no, our next platform is not going to be capable of doing this kind of thing very well. And we don't care. But it's like, you put your marketing people put all this effort into laying the groundwork that Sony just snatched up. It was like, okay, thanks for doing all the hard work evangelizing this kind of game for us. Now we're going to take over. And yeah, it's funny, but that's just kind of how business is sometimes. Before we start, we're going to start ranking it, but really fast, I just want to hear one more thing from Expert. Like, what's, especially because you experienced this so young, what was your favorite moment of the story as a kid? Like, what spoke to you the most?
It's hard to pick out one thing. I guess the raft moment stands out to me because you do stand on that raft for a long time. I think something like over a month passes in game, and you're stuck with, at that point in time, one of the more annoying characters in the game, but you just have to live with that character. I feel like it's kind of an interesting moment where two characters who kind of like clash with each other are basically forced to get along with each other for their own survival. And also the fact that you eventually like come down with scurvy. Like, I'd never heard of scurvy at that point. And then when the game describes what scurvy is, that really grossed me out. Mm-hmm. So I guess that whole sequence played an impression, or it made an impression on me.
That is an oddly like real world esque problem to insert into like a fantasy RPG action kind of story. Yeah, but it's interesting that it happened.
I do want to say that, you know, while it could be said that, you know, Illusion of Gaia's slower moments are certainly more annoying and not conducive to well-flowing play, I am going to admit a drastic hot take here. I like Soul Blazer better than Illusion of Gaia, but I like Illusion of Gaia more than Terranigma.
disagree with you on that one.
Feel free.
Well, disagree with Satinga. Satinga just said, I like this more than this.
I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm just saying.
I disagree with your opinion.
I have a different opinion, I think, is what you. I am surprised that this game has. I don't hear a lot about it from people, but I am interested that it really spoke to expert in that way. And I do think that that's something that you couldn't, that's a really bold step for Quintet, because nothing they had done prior to this had said, hey, let's just have like a, you know, little one act play stuffed into the middle of the story where it's like, but they do a lot of that in the beginning too, because you get stuck in the jail cell, right? And it doesn't, there's nothing you can do about it. You've just got to wander around for several minutes in a confined area, and there's no like secret solution. You just got to wait.
Funnily enough, in the manual, I have it in front of me, there's a part in it where one of the tips is on the travel tips page, it says, never give up. You will often need to be very patient. At times, you must wait for the puzzle to be solved or for equipment to start working. So it's literally telling you, just wait, and then you'll be able to continue.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I think that at the end of the day, it's the not a great game design choice, but it's something that they had to try to find that out. Like, there's a lot more downtime where there's nothing you can do in this game but wait. That's a bold choice that most other, even like, you know, JRPGs weren't doing at the time very much, because it is so weird to just to remove the player's agency from them and make them wait. And I don't know whether it works all that well, but it's clearly was affecting to a probably 9-year-old. So that's pretty good. Yeah.
All right. Now, hang on. There's not a 45-minute discussion about meme theory without, you know, the terminology of meme.
Okay.
We're going to move on to ranking.
Yeah, before we get too Kojima-esque here, let's place it.
Okay.
All right. So I think this...
My final thought on the game is, I've met a bunch of people who have played this game and say that they like it the most. None of them are ever really able to, like, other than, like, experts probably giving me the most, you know, comprehensive reason of why they like it. The rest of them just I've ever met have just said they like it because they played it when they were young. And I feel like kind of it kind of drifts into the Secret of Mana territory nostalgia goggles myself. Like, I've never really been able to find anyone to give me a really good reason other than expert.
Secret of Mana is another game I actually haven't played, so, yeah.
Oh, you can skip that one. It's terrible.
Philistine!
Hey. Word, I agree with you in a lot, but I gotta take a step in. Okay, fine. We'll do that later.
All right, look. Okay, so I think that's fair enough. Like, this is a game, like, if you want to give it a shot, if you like 16-bit graphics, you like 16-bit action RPGs or just action games, like top-down action games, Zelda, slightly Zelda-esque, and you don't mind having certain parts of that normal experience removed from you for the sake of having a story that flows from point to point without giving you big, like, you know, to use one of Sotenga's favorite words, ludonarrative dissonance, where you just get, like, sidetracked by nonsense. That gives you the illusion of like, oh, I'm free to make the story however I choose. No, the story is always the same. It's just like how fast you choose to experience or whether you know where to go. But the game is just like, it's taken a pretty bold step. And I would say, like, even compared to like Chrono Trigger, is giving you a much more directed experience. And if we love, you know, visual novels around here where you're basically just clicking through the text, I mean, it's an interesting playing. It's an interesting choice. Like, I think that it had to be tried, but I do think that the fact that most games of this type, if they even existed much longer than this, which they kind of didn't, that genre didn't last very long. But I don't think that most other games would try this. But like, it's interesting that they did.
Yeah, this game is worth playing. I just don't think that it's worth replaying, I suppose, is what I'm saying. Like, check it out, see what the cutting edge of this kind of thing was like at the time for novelty, if nothing else.
I would say, especially if you're a game designer, you might learn something from this, just from like, either maybe you might learn like, this is what I don't want to do, or this is why this won't work. But you might also learn like, hey, you can actually play around with some of these ideas. So, yeah.
Ranking goes, I'm not going to advocate for too high ranking. Like, I do like this game a lot, but I'm not going to suggest putting it at first place or anything. I was thinking somewhere maybe between Mega Man Legends and Gauntlet Legends.
Let's
see.
Like higher than Gauntlet Legends, lower than Mega Man Legends.
Mega Man Legends is sitting at 228.
Right.
All right.
That's a good starting point. Like, I would say that...
I'll do you one better. Knock it two hits over that. Put it above Crusader of Senti.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Do you agree with that, expert?
Oh my gosh. I haven't played Crusader of Senti, but Mega Man Legends is another huge favorite of mine.
I mean, I would
I'm going to have to give the edge to Mega Man Legends. I would prefer to put Mega Man Legends above Illusion of Gaia.
My reasoning here is that Mega Man Legends, I feel Crusader of Senti is an abomination, and this is a better game than that.
Okay,
I haven't played Crusader of Senti.
You got to look at this in broad strokes, where
it's about the same time of release, and it tries to do similar things of having like an action game with, you know, sort of a Zelda-ish bent with a greater focus on narrative, and it's even worse.
Oh gosh.
Okay, that's putting it above Papa Wii O. It's putting it above Captain Blood, which is his crazy pants crazy. Jagged Alliance 2, Bushido Blade, Radiant Silver Gun, Metal Gear Ghost Babel, Geppi X, Radical Dreamers. If you two agree, then that's it. But
I haven't played most of those games.
Don't tell the listeners. No, it's okay. No, that's part of the fun of the show. Is it's just like, it's sometimes you got to look at a game and like, I'm not sure why that's there. So I got to imagine why it's there. And that works. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to speak up because it sounds like you two can come to an agreement, which is a miracle of podcasting. Hooray. I don't want to interrupt it. Leaving aside your distaste for Crusader of Senti, word, like putting it below Mega Man Legends, would you live with that? Could you live with that?
I do think Mega Man Legends is a better game than this.
And do you think, like, roughly speaking, Neverwinter Nights deserves to be below Illusion of Gaia?
I could live with that.
I think for me, the story of both games, but I think, like, as much as I enjoy Illusion of Gaia and have fond feelings for it, I think, like, while I do like the characters, I think the characters in Legends and Mega Man Legends stick out a lot more. And also, Mega Man Legends gameplay is also more interesting with how there's that sort of exploration in the dungeons and the weapon upgrade system and whatnot.
That's where it goes, right below Mega Man Legends, right above Neverwinter Nights. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, guest host. I really appreciate it, or co-host, I should say. Illusion of Gaia, an interesting, weird game. Might not be your thing, might be your thing, but you got to try to find out. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.